Paul Duane's Irish folk horror film, All You Need Is Death, is now playing in select theaters and on digital from XYZ Films. Beyondfest says, "You'll never be able to hear another folk tune without shivering in fear." David Jenkins of Little White Lies calls it grimly refreshing and confident. You can tell that everyone involved in the making really understood and appreciated the assignment. Watch the genuinely horrifying All You Need Is Death, available everywhere you buy movies.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
Welcome to Development Hell. For every horror movie that hits VOD, countless others end up DOA. Development Hell is the podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're going to find out what went wrong, and then decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korngut. I am the managing editor of Dread Central. I am also a filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Development Hell. Today is the season finale, and because it's the season finale, I wanted to make it extra special. So for today, we have a super fun topic. We are talking about Michael Myers versus Pinhead, aka Halloween in Hell, aka Halloween, whatever you want to call it. We are finally talking about the Michael Pinhead crossover that never was. Today, we have two guests with us. Because it's the finale, I brought on my Dread Podcast Network siblings, Kim and Ket of Kim and Ket Stay Alive. Maybe. Guys, how's it going?
Hi.
Hey.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for joining me. I am psyched. Will you do me a favor and introduce yourselves to the Development Hell audience?
Yes, we are a horror movie comedy podcast. And basically what we do is one of us watches a movie the other one hasn't seen. And we tell them the entire plot, step-by-step, play-by-play. It's a giant spoiler alert, by the way. Mm-hmm. And we stop at key moments to see how we would stay alive.
Total up the points at the end to see if we would stay alive. And this is Ketrin. I often do not. And I'm ready to admit that after 250 episodes that I am not good at staying alive.
She loves the ICU.
Okay. I do. I've always wondered who's staying alive more often. Is that the case?
Kim. It's Kim.
Kim. Okay, Kim. So I know who I need in the apocalypse. And it's not Kat. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
Listen, I have my strengths. There are certain types of apocalypti that I think I would be your best weapon. Uh-huh. But, you know, not all of them.
Okay, so what's the apocalypse I want Kim and what's the apocalypse I want Kat?
Gosh. I think I tend to be a little bit more witchcrafty, if you will.
Sure,
Kim is a lot more logical and mathematical. So she's able to just like see a situation and act logically. I struggle with that when I'm in a moment of panic.
Okay, so Kim, it is. I'm going to have to
Ketrin
write that down.
Also tends to just choose to swan dive out the window like much sooner than I do.
Yeah.
Not to say I don't get there, but she will be just getting started and she's like, I'm out.
Bye.
Hey, respect. I don't want to do it anymore.
If I saw a zombie racing, I'd say, I'm jumping. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I don't want to get eaten up.
Yeah. I also find that I tend to make really stupid attempts to like befriend mass murderers and ghosts and monsters. Like and it. Kim's like, no, like
you're dead.
They don't want to be your friend. They killed you. But I mean, keep trying.
Lonely. And you know what? Yeah. Speaking of lonely horror icons, today, as we mentioned earlier, two of them want to get together. And I think that's a really beautiful thing.
See, they do need friends.
We all need friends. And more speaking of friends, today's episode, a lot of the information that we're going to be giving out is coming from this incredible book by these incredible authors. You guys gotta check out Taking Shape 2. This is a book by Dustin McNeil and Travis Mullins. It is all about unmade Halloween sequels, and I just find it the most fascinating book in the world. You can find it by Harker Press, and you can check out where to buy it in the link in the show notes. So check it out. The first thing I want to talk to you guys about today, pretty fast, is we're going to touch base on how we feel about Halloween and Hellraiser. So if it's okay with you, let's start with Halloween for both of you. What was your first impressions? How did you first sort of find the Halloween Michael Myers franchise?
Yeah, so this particular horror film was very formative for me. There are two horror movies that my father showed me when I realize now probably too young to take them in, but you know, I was his first try. So it's okay. He did his best. And it was either Halloween or The Exorcist. They sort of live in the same place in my brain in terms of like when I viewed them. But Halloween was the one where I sort of learned to be scared of things that were not supernatural, even though Michael Myers has some, you know, arguably supernatural elements to him. It was the idea of like me just walking around living my life and someone might jump out of the bushes and kill me. That was sort of my first little foray into that. And it was also the same year that my dad thought it would be funny to get a Michael Myers like black jumpsuit and a Michael Myers mask and not tell us that he was going to dress that way and chase my brother and I around the house. And it was terrifying. So that's my experience with Halloween.
Okay, Father of the Year.
Yes.
Kat, do you have any favorite Halloween films? The first can be included, of course.
I mean, for me, it sounds basic, but it truly is the first one just because I think the idea of this sort of like silent, slow walking killer is truly the stuff of my own personal nightmares. You know, I don't feel like Michael Myers would allow me to talk my way out of the situation. And that's not something I'm comfortable with. Michael Myers doesn't need to hear from me.
No, he's not a talker. No.
Yeah, my one weapon, my one tool that I always have in my toolbox, he is not here for. So I'd be dead.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Kim, what about you? Where did you start with this franchise?
Well, it's less exciting than my dad chasing me around the house as Michael Myers. But I think I saw it when I was a teenager first because, you know, we're 90s kids. So it was a little before our time. But I remember like sitting in like the back room by myself. It was probably during at least October, like an AMC like marathon or something like that. And I was like, let me see what these Halloween films are all about. And I just loved it. Loved it ever since.
Do you have any favorites other than the first one?
Love the first. I actually really liked the 2018 Halloween.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I know it's, you know, out of the Michael Myers, but 3.
Hell yeah.
3. I always forget about 3.
I love 3. How can you not love Detective Thomas Janine Atkins?
Oh my God. I totally forgot about that.
3 so, is out of control.
Funny story about that, Josh. Kim did Halloween 3. She told it to me on our podcast. Mm-hmm. And if there is a movie that, you know, obviously we haven't seen, we go to great lengths to then avoid learning anything about it. Mm-hmm. So it was news to me when Kim told me Halloween 3 that Michael Myers was not in it. Like, we got to the end. Kim was like, the end. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Is this Halloween?
Oh,
what?
My God. Wow. That's great. That's great journalism, actually. That's great.
It was wild.
Moment. He is in it, though. He is in like 3 seconds on a TV in the bar.
That's true.
That's true.
So don't forget. Never forget.
That's true.
You guys brought up Halloween 2018, and it's those three films are so polarizing. I just got to know, like, where do they sit with you guys? How do you feel about them?
Well, one, we haven't seen the most recent one because we're planning on doing it for an episode, probably. Okay, so, but we haven't decided who's going to be trying to watch it.
Save movies, unfortunately.
Yeah. I freaking loved the 2018 one as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I loved it. And I think for me also, seeing representation for an older woman as the hero was just so goddamn refreshing to me.
Interesting.
I just loved that she was, you know, a grandmother that was kicking ass. Like, I just thought that that was fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. We need more of that in horror and cinema in general.
Yes.
I personally I didn't really connect with Halloween 2018, but I'm one of the few that really liked Halloween Kills because it was silly and nutso, and I connect with that.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of mixed feedback.
Yes.
Oh yeah. And then the third one, you'll get there, like, really polarized people, like impressively polarized the horror audience.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. So we actually have the last Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends. We will be doing episodes on.
Okay. Well, I absolutely cannot wait for those. Those should be fascinating. But we can't talk about Halloween forever because this is also a Hellraiser podcast today. And I have questions. So, Kat,
so do we.
Yeah. When it comes to Hellraiser, like, where did that journey begin for you?
Wait, can I go first on this?
Yes, one? Kim, you go
I'm
first.
On
okay. Yes. So, Hellraiser, and as you can obviously tell, like, one of the ways our podcast works is by one of us at least having not seen the film. That's like the only way we can do it. So, for those listening, just to make it clear. So, like, anytime we haven't seen anything, we try to, like, save it for the podcast now. So, Hellraiser was also one that was, you know, kind of before our time. And so I had never, neither one of us had ever seen it. And, but we know about Pinhead, you know what I mean? Like, you know, all the main characters, you know what's up. Like, you're just like, okay, this movie is about Pinhead.
Yes.
Like, and I've seen the other Cenobites, you know what I mean? Like, I've seen the visuals.
We had cultural reference points for the movie.
Of course.
And then I watched the film and I was not expecting it to be so sexy times.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And we call him Skella Frank by the end of this movie, but Skella Frank was, it just was so unexpected, all of it.
Yeah. Kim fell desperately and hornily in love with Skella Frank. And then by the process of osmosis, I did as well, as she told it to me.
Yes. Well, Frank is hot as hell, but I have to say it, as someone that's super gay, Julia, number one hottie.
Yes.
Shoulder pads.
Shoulder pads. Yes.
Her attitude is shoulder pads, honestly.
Her identity is shoulder pads.
She came out of the womb in shoulder pads.
Oh, yeah. She doesn't even need them. That's just like the shape.
Those are just her regular shoulders.
I love Julia. Honestly, I think she's one of my favorite things about the franchise, and I would love to see her come back.
Yes.
That would be fantastic.
But also sexy Frankie, yes, is a yes. For sure. He's so ill-behaved, you know? Yes,
utterly ill-behaved.
Yeah.
Yes.
Too ill-behaved, honestly. It didn't get him anywhere good.
No, it didn't. And then I told Kim the remake of Hellraiser.
Cool.
The new Hulu one.
No Skella Frank in this one.
No.
But I also loved this one only because I was expecting to hate it, if I'm being honest, just because I feel like that's kind of how I go into most remakes or reboots, just because, you know, it's easier to be let down if you have a shorter distance to fall. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I loved this one. I thought it was great. I love this sort of, like, serious undertones that it had while also not it still gave us everything that we wanted from Hellraiser, if that makes sense.
Totally. It was gritty and fun.
Gritty. That's a good word. Yeah.
But you know what? I've mentioned it already, and everyone at home already knows this, but when it comes to my horror, I lean into the camp and the nonsense. Mm-hmm. And there is one of my favorites in the franchise is, I think it's number 6. Very, very direct-to-video. It's called Hellraiser Hell World, and it's from like 2005. Oh. And it's very internet themed because like that was that's what you did. Remember like fear.com
era? That was the hot thing back in 2005.
The internet was a mystery. And so the whole movie is just like this absolutely dumb like internet rave, or like people are like raving together, but like there's like internet font everywhere. It's so bad. And you have to look up the poster. If you're able to Google, I insist you do now.
Poster, I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, if you're okay with that, I really want you to see it as I'm talking about it.
Hellraiser.
Hell World.
Hell World. Yeah. 2005. Yeah.
The Rick Boda.
I see it.
Film A. It's so good. It's like, it looks like a pinhead is lost and all the numbers.
Wait a goddamn complete minute. Stop the presses right now. Are you telling me that Henry Cavill is in this?
You beat me to it. Yeah, Henry Cavill, aka Mr. Superman himself, is in it and has a pretty explicit blowjob scene. I'm telling you, this is a perfect 10 out of 10 experience film. You have to watch it. It's so insane.
I know what movie Ketan's doing next.
You also know what movie I'm gonna go watch immediately after we finish recording, and which scene I'm going to fast forward to.
Oh, you should.
Shame.
It's shocking. It's like it's all very, very shocking. At one point, Pinhead has like a giant cleaver for some reason. It's not good. And I think the tagline, whoever has the poster up can tell me if I'm right, is "Evil goes online."
Oh gosh!
And I just love this movie.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it's my favorite Hellraiser. Don't come for me in the reviews, but I like it. Of course, 1 is amazing, and 2 is nuts because Hellraiser 2 kind of feels like a Jim Henson film.
Oh dear.
And like it kind of feels like Labyrinth if Labyrinth was a Pinhead movie.
Okay, when you say it that way, okay, I was thinking like Kermit.
I knew I was going the wrong direction. Miss Piggy and stuff. I had to pivot. Had to pivot.
All right.
But also, you know what? Why not that? It's disturbing.
Truly. Mm-hmm.
Who's Kermit? Is Kermit Pinhead? He's got the bald.
Yeah, definitely.
He's got the bald.
Yeah.
And Miss Piggy is your favorite, Josh.
I know. I thought it too. And you know what? But the cutest one.
She is the best one.
I think I would love to see like a fan art of the Muppets as Cenobites.
You heard it here first, folks. Listeners of Development Hell, you have been commissioned.
Yes. Fozzie Bear is Chatter Teeth.
Yes.
Oh my God. Fozzie Bear is my personal favorite.
Animal is just Animal. There's nothing
non-change. That's incredible. So thank you for that. I really appreciate that. And I don't know why I have a whole section here dedicated to Freddy versus Jason, but that is what my heart told me to do.
Have you seen this film?
Yeah.
So we haven't seen it yet because we are going through the entire Friday the 13th franchise one by one every single Friday the 13th. Wow. So I think we're at 7 now, Kat?
Yeah, we just did 6. Next Friday the 13th will be one of us will be watching the 7th.
Oh, you just did 6? A lot of people love 6, but I'm one of those people. So that's very exciting.
I look forward to the day that Jason and Freddy.
Me too.
You know what? I was 13 years old or 12 years old, one of the two, when this movie came out. And it is just truly, by all definitions, my culture, Freddy vs. Jason. It was one of those movies I was desperate to, like, have it come out. I remember it was, like, I was a kid on the internet for the first time, like, researching it in, like, my aunt's room, being like, ooh, and she's like, what are you doing on the internet? And and then it came out, and I was not disappointed. I will say that.
That makes me so happy.
Is there a little bit of homophobia in it? Yes, but it was 2003, and, you know,
everything had a little homophobia yeah. in it in 2003.
Are you aware of the Kelly Rowland moment? Are
no. Familiar?
Can I give it away, or do you want to just wait for the pod? Because I can respect that.
No, give it away.
Yeah, give it away.
We won't
Kelly Rowland calls Freddy Krueger the F word slur.
Oh no.
Kelly.
She was so mad, you know? So she had to.
Oh my gosh. And it's
I don't appreciate it, but I will tell you it's historic.
It's historic.
Like, as a queer horror fan, hearing that in theaters and being like, oh God, what's people right. hate me? But also, this is forever imprinted. Anyways, yeah. I'm not angry. I forgive and I forget, but it's there.
Well, we all have to be allowed to apologize, right? Yeah. And hopefully she's apologizing every day of her life.
And you know what? The movie apologizes because it's so good.
No one is proud of anything they did in 2003.
Not a single thing.
You should see my grade 8 graduation photo. It's a horror movie. It's Hellraiser 5.
I'm just glad that we didn't have cameras on our phones the way we do now.
Oh, my dear God.
So glad that we didn't have, like, internet. In any way, back then, okay, we did, but we didn't have, like, real social media.
Yeah.
I feel like we had, like, kind of had Facebook by the end. But that
we
was
did. Because
it was, like, on the computer.
Kim and I have some pretty college. Embarrassing, like, Facebook albums. Yeah, my first picture is.
Oh, yeah. Listen, we're millennials here. We know.
Yeah.
We have millennial photos from 2010.
Oh, yeah.
It's that very specific sheen, you know?
100.
It's like 100. HD, but it's matte. You know, it's weird.
Yeah, and the fashion. I don't love that fashion is coming back, but here we go.
It's very upsetting.
I'm okay with it. I can finally, like, do it this time, you know? Because last time I was, like, in my Gap sweater and, like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, maybe that's back, too. I don't know.
I think it all comes back.
The big belts are back, you guys.
Oh, God.
The big belts are back.
I like that.
Kim and I may as well have had, like, an entire closet dedicated to just useless big belts.
Yeah. You wear them on top of the clothes.
On top of the clothes.
Wow.
Just decoration.
Okay, I like it. Oh, do you remember jeans under skirt?
I was literally just about to say.
Oh, God.
It was jeans under a skirt with a long tank top and a big giant belt over all of it.
What were we doing? Like a lacy tank top?
Oh, my God.
That sounds great. Honestly, I think you guys sound like fashion icons. And as
I feel like we're not describing it. Based on your reaction.
I told you how I feel about Hellraiser 6, so this correlates. But you know what? We make fun of the fashions, but at the same time, we also have the American Apparel sweater, zip-up sweater. And you know what?
That's true.
I think everyone looked good in that.
That's true. It's fair. It's classic, basic. Mm.
But you know what I did, which was horrible? I did it with, like, the nothing under look, like no t-shirt under, like zipped all the way to the top, but
Joshua.
No shirt under, which is a very weird look that was kind of a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. We all made strange choices.
It was tough times.
Really weird. <choice. laughs> Being gay in 2009 was very hard and weird. Okay. There were no rules.
There weren't. It was just, it was chaos.
It was chaos. It really was. Chaos.
But Britney was giving us such good music.
Of course.
Yeah.
And fashion.
And fashion.
Because I'm bringing up Freddy versus Jason, just because it, like, gives a little bit of context to why people really started wanting to see other people mishmash, that kind of leads me to wanting to talk about dimension films. Would you guys mind if I give a little seminar about them at this time?
Oh, please. I have my note-taking pad out, and as I'm ready said to learn.
Yes. We are 90s kids, so dimension is where it started for me. At least
Can you just, like, feel that logo?
Yes.
Not even see it, just, like,
logo.
Feel it.
Yes. Yeah,
if it wasn't for the Weinsteins, and I'll get into a second, like, I would consider that as a tattoo, but
Can't yeah. do that anymore. Yeah, they ruined it.
They ruined it. Okay, ruined well, everything. To get into it, because I'm already giving away all the spoilers, Dimension Films was started by, unfortunately, Bob and Harvey Weinstein.
I actually didn't know that, and now I'm
sad. Oh, either. Okay, so I'm glad I got to it quickly.
Yeah.
Yes, so these infamous, horrible figures of cinema got together and started Dimension Films in 1993, and their first film that they released was actually Hellraiser 3.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, the Weinsteins, they come up like all the time when you're talking about unproduced films.
Interesting.
Because, well, first of all, they were everywhere in Hollywood. Like, they had their fingers like every pie. Like, it's in like a really disturbing way. I'm sorry I used that metaphor.
But yeah, but it's literally true. And figuratively. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like all over Disney, all over like eventually the Weinstein Company. And then, of course, they did Dimension Films. And I think the first franchise that they decided to like buy up was Pinhead and Hellraiser. And then they released the third film, which I think was the same year, in 1993. They scooped up the Halloween franchise in the mid-90s, I think 1995. And they first released the sixth film in the series, Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. Have you guys seen this one?
Kim, have we seen this one?
I get confused. Which one is the one with the little girl that wears the clown suit?
Okay, so
is
that's that five four, or six? So we're getting four. Closer. Four okay. and five. And we're actually going to talk about that girl today. Okay. Was Danielle Harris.
Yes, yes. Love
who's
her.
Who's still a horror icon to this day. And we're going to talk about her a little later. But it was in 1996 when Dimension Films really skyrocketed. This is when they released From Dusk Till Dawn, their first film with Robert Rodriguez. Which
I
is,
love that movie. Oh,
I love it too. I love it too. It's bonkers and sexy as hell.
So sexy. I watched that with my now husband when we like first started dating back in 2009. I had never seen it until then. He showed it to me. It's one of his favorite movies.
And I'm not surprised you're married at all, to be honest. I mean, that would be a good reason, honestly, if someone was like, this is my favorite movie. I'd be like, okay. If they said the second and third were their favorite movie, I would move in right away.
Yeah.
that's my favorite kind of thing. Okay, so that came out in 1996. That's a big deal. But of course, the movie that really put them on the map was Scream.
Scream!
Scream kind of invented a whole subgenre.
Our favorites.
Yeah, and Dimension Films had their name all over it. Is this the movie that you think of when you think of Dimension?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, with like the phone ring.
And oh,
and like that scream.
This was so monumental in my like I can place exactly where I was in my life when this movie came out.
I love
for
that.
For sure. Yeah.
Where were you?
I was in 7th grade. Okay. And Clay Goodyear was expressing some interest in me. He was an 8th grader.
Clay.
And he wanted to go take me on a group date. And we were going to see Scream. And listen, I was pretty brave. It didn't really scare me. But boy, did I play up the scared girl so that I could hold Clay Goodyear's hand.
Wow.
Yes, I did. And that is also where I learned that I am a sucker for the funny guy. Because my crush on Matthew Lillard was profound.
Yeah. I mean, he's not just funny. He's also just insanely hot.
Insanely hot.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. But there's so many hot guys in this movie. Okay, can I?
Yeah,
can I,
I'm
like,
more of a Skeet girl myself, but I don't. I mean, I love Matthew. Don't get me wrong, but Skeet was where it was at for me. I love a bad boy. What can I say?
And not actually, fun trivia about Kim and I. One of the many reasons that we have stayed best friends for as long as we have is because we have totally different taste in men. And so I really was always a Matthew. Out. Yeah, I was always a Matthew Lillard girl. She was a Skeet girl. So we never had a fight over boys.
Are there like two types of girls in this world? You're either a Matthew Lillard girl or a Skeet girl.
100%.
Even if you're gay, that's fine.
Yep.
That's how you figure it out.
That is what you do. Can I tell you what my type is? I don't know. I feel like
please.
I have to now.
No, you do have to.
Like, and like, it's neither of these, unfortunately, but like really tired looking guys. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I do.
Yeah.
Okay, I do. Too.
Like, okay. My number one crush probably of all time, and I don't understand it, is Tobey Maguire, but only in Cider House Rules.
Okay. Okay.
Only in that movie. Johnny Darko, not Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes, got it. Yep.
And Daniel Radcliffe, not Harry Potter. Maybe both.
That's interesting that you see Daniel Radcliffe as looking tired.
Oh yeah,
I find him to look very sprightly.
I see it as both. And you know, speaking of sprightly, another person that's on the list, Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood is just a straight up sprite.
Yeah. He's just.
But I see that the Elijah Wood and the Daniel Radcliffe crossover to the Maguire.
Yeah.
Like, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
I cannot tell. It's like, is this Pepsi or Coke? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now everyone knows. I think the audience may have already known, but
tired sprites. That's
tired sprites is just. Yeah,
that's fine.
I love
bullseye.
It.
I am not ashamed. Call me tired sprites. So
oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, Scream, like this is. We are still replicating Scream and horror to this day. Like the influence of Scream cannot be understated.
No.
We just received Scream 6, which I don't know about you guys. I fucking loved.
Loved it.
So, we actually got to go to a friends and family screening of Scream 6.
One of the writers.
One of the writers is a friend of the pod and now a friend of ours. And it was just really fun getting to like see it in a theater setting. Because again, our job prevents Kim and I from like getting to just willy-nilly go see a horror movie at the theater.
The directors were just there more for the opening meet and greet section.
So cool.
That's
honestly, this is horror history. And like we can underplay it all we want, but that's what that is. And that's cool.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. I loved it. It was gritty and dark. Like it was different, you know, like it was, but still the same.
Still the same. You know what? And like not too much. Okay, we can love Scream as much as we want, but at the end of the day, I am and I Know You Did Last Summer girl at my like my core.
Oh, I love that one too.
Yeah.
Love
that
both.
One. That one Kim and I have discussed as have we forgot it enough that we could do it for the pod.
Please do.
I loved it.
Then I've forgotten it enough, I think. So maybe we'll do it for the pod. Kim can tell it to me.
A little fun fact about Scream, though, and its influence. It's actually one of the influences of our podcast. Like the idea of the podcast kind of – and like there's a clip from it is like our opening because when she answers the phone and they're like, do you like scary movies? And she says, no, it's always some bimbo running up the stairs when she should be running out the front door. It's insulting. So that's how we got the idea to be like, oh, what do you do in that moment? Do you run up the stairs or do you run out the front door?
Yeah.
So – Thanks to Scream.
I love that. I'm so glad we got to talk a little bit about Scream today because I didn't know how connected it was to your show. But of course, there's that, you know, iconic Kim and Kat intro.
Yeah.
I learned recently that Freddie Prinze Jr. auditioned like 3 times for the role that went
Skeet?
To Skeet.
Yeah. Oh, no way.
Oh, my God.
I'm so glad he didn't get it.
Me too.
I know.
Too.
Three
no
times.
No offense to Freddie Prinze Jr., but.
That it
no.
wasn't going to go to him. Yeah.
No.
Actually, I just
no, thank you.
He has a horror podcast out.
Please
now.
Be seated.
Wait, Freddie Prinze has a horror podcast?
Yes,
that's fun.
It's just came out. It's called That Was Pretty Scary, and it's incredible.
I want to listen.
You
what
have
a
to
sweetie
listen.
Bear.
Yes, the first episode is about I Know What You Did Last Summer, which he had never seen prior to this podcast.
What?
Wait, yes. What?
Guys, you gotta.
He
you
never
gotta,
saw it.
He's
his
never
wife
seen it, 'cause he hates watching
is in
himself.
It.
I know that. I'm sure that's how they met.
I think it is how they met, actually.
How, of course. I love it. Anyway, so.
That's so cute. Yes. I've actually, we live in LA, so I've actually waited on them like quite a few times and their family, and they are so nice and so sweet.
God.
Their kids are adorable. Like, they are just a delightful, wholesome couple and family.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Oh,
so
you just ruined my life.
Because I am, number one Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan of all time. So.
Okay. Did we know this about each other, that we were both ginormous Buffy fans?
Now we do, and now we can. Now we're starting our own podcast.
I was going to say Buffy Pod. Only on the Dread Podcast Network. 24, guys. God, I love Buffy so much. Okay, but back to Dimension Films.
So we're really off the rails.
The worst.
No. This is how I do it. Of course, they were followed by other very iconic horror movies like Scream 2, The Faculty,
Love.
And Halloween H2O.
I know it's bad, but I loved it then. Don't even care.
Which one? Wait, which of the three was bad?
All of
– okay, how
Halloween H2O.
How dare you do that, actually? Halloween H2O is like, maybe my second favorite Halloween film, which to me is, that says a lot.
I mean, I haven't seen it probably since it came out. So like, in my world, it's good. It's just that everyone says it's bad. So I'm like, oh, I guess I'm supposed to think it's bad, but I haven't seen it as a grown
up. Listen, I can't say that it's good. I can say that I love it. Okay. Also, Michelle Williams giving Oscar-worthy performance, honestly.
She's the best.
Kim, cool. I think you could probably tell me that one for the pod if you so choose.
Oh, let's do it.
Yeah. Halloween H2O.
Oh, my God. That's incredible. Okay, well, I love that film. And yeah, and oh, you know who actually wrote the first draft of Halloween H2O? Was screenwriter Kevin Williamson.
Yes. My friend Kevin Williamson.
Best friend Kevin Williamson.
Kevin Williamson is the coolest. He's is awesome. The icon, honestly, of horror in the 90s.
He's fantastic.
And now. So that's cool as hell. Yeah, the concept of Michael Myers versus Pinhead, this is when it first sort of hit the table, was around the release of Scream. And wow. What's interesting is that, so obviously now Dimension Films has the rights to both the Halloween movies and the Hellraiser movies all of a sudden right around this time.
Got it.
And the first time there was some crossover between the two was Halloween 6 director Joe Chappelle was actually brought on as the replacement for the director in in Hellraiser 4 Bloodline. Hellraiser 4 Bloodline, this very sort of infamous horror movie that is, like, there's no director credit on it now. It's an Alan Smithy film. Have you ever heard of
it? Yes. Oh, we have learned about Alan Smithy. Yes.
So for those that don't know, Alan Smithy is, like, if a director really wants their name off of a project, that's kind of what replaces it.
Isn't it also, doesn't it also replace a writer that doesn't want to be on it, or is it just directors?
I don't know. I've only heard it for directors, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Kim, am I making that up?
Imagine if, like, a best boy was, like, make it Alan Smithy.
Make not it Alan Smithy. That would be fantastic.
Crafty is like, oh, sorry about that, guys. Yeah. Gonna make it to Trader Joe's for that one.
Or it's like you sit down at the credits of like a really bad movie and it's just like Alan Smithy did everything on the film.
like it all, you know, he did everything. Location Scout hit. Yep. Yeah, wow. So that was the first time that we had some official crossover between these two very different franchises. And a very wise man, Mr. Doug Bradley, this is Pinhead himself, was not looking forward to the idea of a crossover between the two. Before there was even any sort of announcement that they were developing one, here's what he had to say. I think this was to Fangoria magazine. With New Line producing this Freddy Jason crossover, my biggest fear is that since Dimension has the rights to both the Halloween and Hellraiser films, some bright spark is going to come up with the Pinhead versus Michael script. Isn't that so funny?
Some that is spark. So shady.
He's a queen.
Like, I love it.
Yeah, Drag Race couldn't actually do that.
Wow. You know? The sarcasm of calling someone a bright spark is just so shady.
I'm going to say that it's evil. It's truly Pinhead, you know? Like, he Pinhead? He is.
Yes, 1,000%.
And there can be more than one, but he's one of them.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And, you know, he was right because, yes, a couple of bright sparks actually over time had the idea to come up with a crossover between Michael Myers and Pinhead. And now today, I'm really glad there's three of us. It really worked out because the three of us are going to sort of take a lead talking about each of these attempts.
I can't
wait. So I'm very excited about this. And I was wondering, Kim, would you give us a bit of a lowdown, a bit of a seminar on the first unsuccessful crossover, Halloween.
I would be Teach delighted.
Teach away, Ms. Burns.
I'm excited.
Okay. 1998. Picture it.
I loved it.
Is when the first serious example of a crossover began to develop. So Dave Parker, who's the writer and director of The Dead Hate the Living, The Hills Run Red, and even a segment of the Dread release, bow, 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 whoop, whoop, Tales of Halloween.
Oh, shit.
Entered the chat. So, interestingly, this guy had previously submitted a rejected take of Freddy versus Jason in 1995.
So not a good sign.
Bad sign. He really wants to match up some horror icons.
He really does.
Determined.
He's the dating app of horror icons.
Yes.
That's so good. Well, that is something I'd like to see happen.
Dave Parker. Okay, so the title for this concept, Hellraiser Halloween or Halloween for short?
Okay, wait. What do we feel of these titles?
I don't feel good about it.
Well, I couldn't disagree more. Halloween? Are you kidding? It's so funny.
Because I don't hear hell.
You hear hello.
I hear hello. Yes.
And ween.
Okay.
Halloween.
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 Yeah.
Why did Hellraiser get the possible namesake? Like Hellraiser colon Halloween and not...
Right.
Hellraiser?
And not
Halloween colon Halloween. Well, that sounds stupid. They both sound stupid.
How would you do it backwards? How would you do
Halloween colon?
No, Hallowraiser.
Hallowraiser.
Hallowraiser. I like that, actually.
Okay, the fact that it's not called Hallowraiser is unacceptable.
No. Hallowweezer.
Hallow Weezer.
That's
oh my gosh. Guys, why are we not paid to do this?
Yeah. This is when it happens. Someone's gonna call. Someone will call. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Please go ahead.
So in 2003, so a couple years later, Hinge expert Dave Parker told Fangoria, I was a horror Hinge, as we like to call it.
Horror Hinge.
I was a big fan of Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, House of Frankenstein, and the other rallies. I was like, oh God, Freddy versus Jason would be so much fun in a geeky sort of way. And then I started thinking about what other ones you could feasibly do. And obviously, Dimension had both Pinhead and Michael Myers. So, like the bright spark that I was, I started thinking about how it might work and came up with a take that wasn't 100% true to both mythologies, but there was something there that definitely worked.
Okay, hold on. When he's even saying, what does he say? Not 100%
he
true
said,
to both?
Yeah, not 100%.
It was, in fact, 2% true, but he wasn't wrong. It wasn't 100%.
He gets it.
Yeah. That's fine. He's like, I'm going to make it a little bit smidge true about each, hopefully.
I'm just saying that it's bad. Like, that's what he's saying to me right now.
Yeah. Right. So what was it about? Mm-hmm. Well, on Halloween night in 1963... Little Michael is out trick-or-treating when a shifty vagrant offers him the lament configuration instead of candy.
Wow.
He opens the box, and instead of receiving a meeting with Pinhead and friends, a different demon escapes from hell.
What?
This time, the demon is...
What is it?
Sam Hain.
No.
First name Sam, last name Hain. Am I to believe that that is a first last name situation, right?
I think so. Not a Madonna. It's the full thing.
I'm so sorry. Katrin is leaving the chat. I have to go.
Samhain is one word, right?
Yes.
Sam.
Samhain is one word and it is not pronounced Sam Hain.
I mean, to be fair, it is pronounced that in the original Halloween. So. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. It's canon.
So, good old Sammy Hain, the Lord of the Dead, goes on to possess Michael and causes him to murder his sister Judith, like in the opening scene of Halloween. Oh.
Okay. All right.
So, we're like creating a new past mythology for Michael.
Okay.
Then we cut to modern day. When a team of familiar faces to both genres have broken into the Myers house to search for the puzzle box. Of course, it's opened.
Of course.
Then Pinhead and friends arrive. So we're in the Myers house.
Pinhead and friends.
Pinhead and friends.
Pinhead and friends Christmas.
You know them. You love them. Pinhead and friends. But it also has Michael. A.K.A. Sam Hain.
Sam Hain.
Return home to the Myers house. So Pinhead and his crew recognize Sam Hain as an escapee from hell. And then the humans are caught in between.
We always are.
We're always there.
Okay. Okay. Wait. So okay.
Yeah. I can't.
I mean, what do you guys think?
You know what? No notes. Print. Let's do it.
No notes, but there are questions.
So many questions.
Okay. I do like them being like, oh, you got away. That's bad, bad. You have to come back. I do kind of like that.
Sure. Yeah. I'm still, I guess, I don't even know what my questions are. I have a lot of them and I can't even bring one to the forefront because there's so many. So Sam Hain is presumably in this mythology. He is the Lord of the Dead.
Dead. But the demon who possesses Michael Myers,
right? But is he neighbors in the hell dimension with Pinhead and friends?
You know,
or
what,
like, did we accidentally open like a different neighbor?
Well, that's what I'm confused about, because like, did Michael come out of the box too, or he was already out of the box,
right?
And then just happened to be
people
back at his house.
Escape hell, though. Like, people are kind of like sneaking out of hell every once in a while.
Oh, so, okay.
I feel like I believe it. Like, like, what's his face got out of hell with like a little bit of like sexy with his girlfriend?
Oh, so, Frank. Skele-Frank.
Skele-Frank did it. And if Frank can do it, you know, Sam Hain can figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, Pinhead and friends are trying to, I'm just trying to understand it, wrap my brain around it, are trying to get Mr. Hain back into hell with them. But
yes,
Mr. Hain is in Michael's body. So like the battle is more between them, and then the humans are just
dying,
caught in the crossfire.
Happen to stay like in the house. Like, they don't just leave the house because of the battle between the hell lords.
The teens have to die, right?
Right.
Must die. So
okay.
I do have to say, like, when I was thinking about this, because when we bring up Freddy versus Jason, you know, I was like, oh yeah, like I mean, not so much Jason, but like they like attack a little bit more. You know what I mean? Like, Michael and Pinhead don't do much.
Yeah.
They kind of mostly stands there, and then like Michael walks.
Yeah.
So I feel like at least Michael officially being supernatural definitely helps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now they both have supernatural powers to fight each other. So, you know, that's
fair.
Cool.
Yeah.
And they're like giving a similar amount of energy, which I think you kind of just mentioned.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of, I'll get into it later, but that's how I feel about some matchups here in terms of like compatibility on this horror dating site. I just don't feel like people are swiping right on the right people for them. You know what I mean?
Honest with themselves about like what they need, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll get into that later, but yeah, I have some concerns about, you know, who they're swiping right and left on.
Yeah.
So needless to say, Parker, the CEO of OK Demon, did get in front of Dimension executives with this pitch.
Yeah.
Nice job, buddy.
But he was ultimately turned down out of a lack of interest in seeing the two franchises collide.
Fair. Ouch.
Good. Okay. I think people were making good choices.
I would agree with that, actually.
I would agree as well. Yeah.
Which is never the case. I feel like they're always making bad choices. And so I'm really happy to hear that they didn't do that this time.
It's surprising.
I mean, that's sort of the human condition, you know, making bad choices.
Yeah. And the execs sort of condition, but not this time. So good for them.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate that. I was very curious about Halloween, mostly because the title, it's so good. But I also know that there was another sort of attempt that was kind of note a little further down the line. And I thought maybe, Kat, you could sort of walk me through that one. I think it's called Halloween in Hell.
Why, Josh, I'd love to take you on a stroll through Halloween in Hell.
Okay.
So in 2002, there was a second attempt to pit these baddies against each other. 1 year before Freddy versus Jason writing duo Josh Stolberg and Bobby Florsheim arrived with a new campier pitch. Campier for you, Josh. And I know this. You're the audience for this. Huh? You may know these names from writing Piranha 3D.
Oh.
Damn.
Sorority Row. Oh. And Spiral from the Book of Saw.
Okay. Can I pause you for a second there?
Please. Yes.
Sorority Row. One of my favorite movies is Sorority Row. Have you seen it?
I think I'm getting it confused with something, and I'm not sure.
It's a remake. So it is a remake of The House on Sorority Row, which I think is like a 70s, maybe 80s movie.
Which I think we did.
I think we did the original.
Yes. Yes,
that sounds actually very familiar. This was like a 2000, I want to say, 8 remake. And so you can only imagine.
I can see it as if I'm watching it in front of my eyes as we speak.
It's truly so good. I'm couldn't
interested
recommend
in that
higher.
One.
I'm kind of interested as well. Quick interjection. I do love random facts of knowledge. And I did just learn something about piranhas that I would like to share with everyone.
Okay.
It is incorrect that piranhas are man-eating attackers. There has never been a piranha attack, nor has anyone ever been killed by a piranha. And they are, in fact, very shy, skittish fish who just have a terrible PR agent.
I'm so disappointed right now.
I am too. And but I just thought that I had a responsibility to tell you all.
It's too bad.
So their script was titled Halloween in Hell, Michael vs. Pinhead.
I have to say I do like this title better.
This is good.
Straightforward.
Okay, yeah,
you know what you're getting into. You know who's going to be there. You know what kind of party it is. Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. This was pitched with the idea of a boxing poster.
Oh, nice. Great. Good, good, good. I can totally see that. And it looks good.
It looks great. Ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba. So this is where obviously Michael and Pinhead square off. The potential tagline was, this Halloween, they're going to raise a little hell.
10 out of 10.
10 out of a million.
I mean, I don't even hate that either. I'm in for this one.
This one's
so far
clearly iconic and good.
I like how straight they're not trying to reinvent the wheel, right?
No,
they're just
no.
like, this is where we are. This is what we're doing. This is what you're gonna see.
Mm-hmm. The cheese wheel. And I love it.
Yes, the cheese wheel. The movie started off in Chicago with a support group dedicated to horror movie survivors, including our very own Kirstie Cotton of Hellraiser.
Cool.
Yep. And of course, Jamie Lloyd of the Halloween films.
Oh, so that's who's he? What's it?
Daniel Harris.
Yes.
Daniel Harris.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, guys, I'm in for this one so far. Go
very
on.
Yeah. Choices. For
Can
sure.
you fucking imagine though being in a support group? So Kirstie Cotton shows up and she's like, "Yo, this guy covered in pins came out of a box and tried to kill me and everyone that I love." And Jamie's like, "You're not gonna believe it, but guess what happened to me?" Like, that's the fact that these two women were in the same room together is just
for
magic.
Sure. And
it's
like,
just a
what
room
are the
full of final
people?
Girls?
You know,
a
like the people that girls. Survived Critters 2, like, what are they talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
They need help too.
They need so much help. Yeah.
This is. Wait, guys, are we writing this movie about a Final Girls support group also? Like, is that what we're doing?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So Jamie is still constantly stalked by Michael. Because of this is really smart, actually. Something as survivors, Kim, we may need to look into. Because of this, she keeps her own blood in stock at the local hospital. They just have her own a little mini fridge for her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Genius.
And for ongoing infusions for when she loses blood in inevitable Michael Myers meetups.
I mean, smart, but...
genius.
Good
sad,
Lord. Exhausting.
It's
smart. Is the right
it's
word.
Exhausting. And this is, again, we talked about my will to live. I mean.
Right. That takes so much will to live. Like year after year, month after month to be like,
oh,
another blood infusion.
Yeah.
I would just go to sleep and like unlock my door and be right. like, yes. I'm sleepy. You know?
Come in, sweet Michael.
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
Meet me Josh in my and slumbers.
I'm just playing Tori Amos nice and loudly.
yeah.
Like, it's going to be okay.
Josh and I are hanging out, smoking some weed, yeah. door open, unlocked, ready for Michael, while Kim is like out there giving blood and getting transfusions. Like, come on, who has the better life?
Oh, it's not her. It's just not.
Yeah. yeah. Okay, so Michael, of course, hears about the meeting and arrives. And spoiler alert, there's a big fight. And for some reason, he ends up stabbing the puzzle box.
Why
so
not?
in this fight, he stabs the puzzle box, which obviously opens, and here comes Pinhead. So Michael then murders Kirsty, who taunts the Cenobites. This is a badass final girl move. She's like, I might be dying, but I'm going to roast you as I go. Because she says, with her dying words, to the Cenobites, you never got me. That's so funny. Pinhead and friends are super pissed. They don't like being called out. And they're really mad that someone else got to murder Kirsty. And they vow to find her killer and reap his soul instead. And cool. that's the basic setup for the film.
Guys, I'm Kirstie. In for this one.
I love this one. I want to watch it.
Yeah, me too. Kirsty goes hard.
Yeah.
Good for yeah. her. She always
did. It's fantastic. Yeah, I'm 100% in for this one.
Yeah, so, I'm like sad to lose her, that like one of the final girls had to die to start mm-hmm. the beef. But mm-hmm. so
but
far, I'm in.
Like they usually do it like Halloween Resurrection, where like they just get rid of the last final girl and it's like mm. kind of disrespectful.
Yeah.
But this feels purposeful.
Because they gave her such like, yeah. they gave her such a moment to
also,
go
to
out.
Be fair, she could probably like go to hell or something and end up coming back. Like, you know what I mean?
True.
Like, I feel like
mm-hmm. it's open-ended.
I feel like when it comes to soul shit and Hellraiser, like your soul can come back somehow. She'll come back as a new person.
And like, that's some body soul shit science right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's Hellraiser science.
Hellraiser science, yeah. So the story goes on from here with Jamie going to the hospital to get some blood out of her blood refrigerator.
Sure.
Right. Because obviously she's lost a ton of blood in the battle. Sadly, the nurse makes a mistake and she ends up giving Jamie Lloyd's blood to seven other patients by mistake.
Oh, shit.
And since Michael can sense Jamie's blood, which I'm like, is that part of the lore? That
it
he can
now.
Like smell blood? Okay. So Jamie can Michael can smell blood. He smells
maybe it's
Jamie's.
Like, it's like he like, he's like, he can just
sense
Jamie,
it?
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
But now he's sensing
all
who
is she to him? Like, aren't they related somehow again?
Like, yeah.
Sister's daughter, I think.
Or like niece, nephew, something?
Niece. Sister's daughter. Niece.
Sister's daughter.
That's a word for it. Yeah. That's a band name.
Yeah, so he senses it, but it's in the seven patients that got her blood instead. So they're all slaughtered except an exceptionally bright 10-year-old girl. Give it up for Betsy.
Betsy.
Hey, Betsy. Welcome.
Betsy, Betsy, Betsy. So the finale would see Michael and Pinhead trapped in hell, obviously, by Queen Betsy and the Jamie team, who have somehow gained access to a giant lament configuration to trap them in hell. So it's you know, it's silly, but I feel like this all
Guys.
Works.
I'm fully on board for this one.
Yeah, this pitch was never greenlit. I'm greenlighting it today.
Let's make it.
I think you should.
Greenlit.
That's great. Honestly, it knows what it is. It's like, it's self-aware. It's fun. But it's also like kind of like respectful to its roots. And
yes,
like it works.
Right.
I like that.
As compared to the quote unquote...
Sammy.
Not 100% true to both or neither mythologies of Halloween.
Listen, if that is your pitch going in, that does not bode well.
No, it doesn't.
Hi, I'd like to pitch this crossover sequel type of thing, but I'm not going to use any of the mythology.
I'm sorry.
Is that cool?
No. I think the pitch is all this is the pitch. You go in, there's a chalkboard, and on the chalkboard you say nothing. You just write Halloween.
Yeah, and you're like done.
And then you turn the O into like a money sign for some reason, even though it's not an S.
Yeah.
Love it.
And then you just drop the mic.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, Kim, we had the same joke. I was about to say you drop the chalk and leave.
Oh, okay.
We have the same brain.
Yours is better, sorry.
Halloween in Hell is really good. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, okay, as I said earlier, there is a third iteration that also sort of never came to be.
Give it and to me straight. Let's do it.
This one is different. Now, this one we don't have as much sort of information on what the actual story would have been, but what makes it so fascinating is that it involves John Carpenter and Clive Barker. So yeah, these are the original behind both of these iconic franchises. So there was a serious third attempt to make this movie, and I believe it only happened a couple of days after that massive opening weekend of Freddy vs. Jason.
Wow.
I forget how much money it made. I want to say over 30 million. That's one of my guess. It made big money for the time. And so I think a few days later, they got John Carpenter and Clive Barker into a room or on the phone to discuss sort of both being involved on a crossover between their two films in the wake of Freddy vs. Jason. You know, the money was kind of hard to, look away from.
Sure.
And I think both of these franchises had kind of done their creators dirty over time. And I think, you know, they kind of wanted to make up for it. And I think the creators were like, I will make money, you know, like,
yeah, I love that.
Let me make money off of this for the first time. You know, like it was sort of stolen from me financially and I totally sort of love them getting it back.
I had Google up from whatever we were searching earlier and already Freddy and Jason up. The budget was actually 30 million. The box office was 116 million.
Whoa!
So I'm just saying, John Carpenter and Clive Barker.
Damn.
I wonder if that's like for both films, maybe the highest grossing entry or thereabouts.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty dope.
Yeah. So you can't ignore it. And it was good. I'm like, in my opinion, it was like, for 2003, was kind of fun. And so maybe they thought, okay, well, maybe we can do it with these guys. We both own the rights. Like, the rights are in the same spot.
That's smart, honestly.
Mm-hmm. It's smart. And as we were saying earlier, like, as dumb as it kind of sounds, tonally, these two guys have the same energy. So maybe they could do it. And so they got together and they talked about it. And he even has a quote. Clive Barker is quoted in the documentary, Halloween 25 Years of Terror. And he was talking about the project and he said, I was kind of stoked about the idea. I called up John and I said, what do you think about this? Because if you don't want to do it, I won't do it. Which,
wow,
what a classy move.
Yeah.
What a classy, truly. What a classy gay.
Love. You know?
I love it. And I do think that these guys were friends, which is cool. So like they could just call each other up with this.
Cute. Yeah. You always love to hear about Hollywood friendships.
Especially this one. It's like, ugh. Would have been cool if they I don't know if they've worked together, but I don't think so. But allegedly John Carpenter agreed to this, and I don't know if this is 100% certain, but I think there was a quote down the line that Carpenter was possibly in line to direct it while Clive Barker was going to write it.
Wow.
Yeah. On board.
Do you think that's the right setup for this?
I was just about to say that. I feel like that's the setup that I would have pitched.
Mm-hmm, me too. I think it's like very tonally correct because I think you have a storyteller and an author and then like one of the best eyes as a director out there. So
yeah, I think that was the right move.
Yeah. But I don't think this lasted long. It all fell apart for a technical reason, which I actually find kind of interesting. So the reason they couldn't make this film is because it was ultimately vetoed by Mustafa Akkad, who's a very interesting figure in the land of Halloween. He owns the rights to Michael Myers, and his son still does to this day.
What?
He was the original investor in the original film.
What?
So he always had say over what happened with Michael Myers. And he definitely butted heads with John Carpenter to the point of John Carpenter abandoning it completely by the fifth film. But Mustafa took Michael Myers very seriously. And here's what he had to say to Fangoria in Make a Freddy versus Jason, any other team up is going to look derivative. When it comes to Michael, we don't feel we have to jump on any matchup bandwagon. Yeah.
So like hear that then.
Right.
Yeah. But I feel like enough time has passed that we could totally do it now.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it would be great. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
That's so interesting. So you think like it's time for like a crossover between these two and like maybe with the original, like with the originals back?
Yeah, I think that'd be cool. I mean, I'm down for either yours or Kett's. To be honest, I told them I had only read my concept, so I didn't know what I was getting into with the other concepts. I only got Mr. Samhain, so I was like, whoa. So when I heard your guys, I was like, these both sound great. But yeah. I mean, I think it would be phenomenal to have it be John Carpenter and Clive Barker. Like that would be fucking rad, you know?
I'm still so fascinated that just this random guy, Mustafa Akkad, owns Michael Myers.
Yes, and he's passed away, actually. He had a really, like a really tragic death. I think it might have been like a terrorist attack at like an event he was at. Yeah, really, really intense stuff. But his son is now super in charge. Wow. Trankus International, I believe, is the name of the company. And they still, their number one IP is Halloween.
Wow.
Wow.
We got to call up. So now that Blumhouse is done, like they have it back and they can do what they want.
Mr. Akkad Jr.
Yeah.
I forget his name offhand. See what's up. But yeah. I've actually tried to contact him to see if he would talk to me about Michael Myers movies. And of course, I have not heard back, but I will never give up.
Never give up.
Oh my God. That's
never
cool.
Give up.
Michael doesn't. You shouldn't either.
No. And you know what? Neither does Pinhead.
True.
That's why they are perfect together. Okay. Yeah. My question for both of you is, will we ever see a Michael versus Pinhead movie? Why or why not?
I mean, it sounds like it's all down to this dude, like at the end of the day, because like I do hear what he was saying of being like, oh, this movie just came out, so like we don't want to just like do the same thing. But now that was like 10 years ago, right? So
yeah.
I think it's – look – until I heard the ideas, I'm no writer, okay? But when I heard like a couple ideas, I was like, all right, let's do it. Yeah. I think we totally should. But it sounds like truly this one dude, it's up to him.
Mm-hmm. And here's what I feel about this one dude. I'm afeard that it sounds like his father was very precious about Michael Myers, mm-hmm. which fine, to each his own. But it feels like there is a chance that Akkad Jr. could potentially be like exponentially more precious about it now in terms of it sort of being his father's legacy. Like I can see him holding on to the intellectual property tighter and it actually being harder to make now.
I mean, these last three movies made a lot of money. So now it's a
there you go.
That's true. That's property. True. And I guess Pinhead, we did also see that Pinhead is still relevant recently too.
Right.
So I'm wondering you're right.
If that did well or not. Because it's so hard to know with streamers. Like we don't know how that performed.
I mean, I feel like weren't the reviews of it
positive generally? I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were.
So. Interesting. And I just found his name. The son's name is Malik. Akkad. Yeah.
That's a great fucking name, by the way.
Yeah, he seems cool. These are pictures of him on like the red carpet for Halloween. He looks cool as hell.
Oh, wait, I have to Google it. How do you spell his first name?
M-A-L-E-K. Akkad. Malik Akkad. It's kind of hot, actually, to be honest with you.
Oh, damn. Yeah, he's a daddy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
What's up? Hey. How's it going?
Yeah. Hey, guy? Malik. I mean, I want to marry into the Michael Myers, you know, dynasty.
Right?
I love that journey for you.
So can I give you my sort of opinion on if this has a
please?
No.
fine. You're
continue, please.
I don't know is my answer. We didn't get my very first episode of this podcast ever was on Freddy versus Jason 2, and that never happened. even though the first film made so much money.
Hmm.
And I think, and we never like get to see these mashups anymore, but we did just have a Godzilla versus King Kong that did really well. So maybe I'm wrong. Okay. I think we would have to get a Freddy versus Jason 2 or at least a reboot on that. That would have to do really well. And then there would be a chance for something like this. I think only in the wake of Freddy versus Jason will this movie ever get made.
That's a good point. Yeah. And that's a logical trajectory that you're laying out there. It's nerdy,
but you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Can I talk about my concerns, not with the matchups as movies, but matchups in terms of compatibility in the dating world?
I would really like that.
Because I'd really like, I've gone back and forth multiple times and I would really love for you guys to weigh in.
Okay.
So I feel like if we're doing a buddy comedy, right, then I'm going to put Michael and or Jason, who are our non-talkers, with Freddy or Pinhead, which right. is kind of how they've worked out. Where it's, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want to have two non-talkers. So like Michael and Jason would never work. Like, I don't feel like right. they would be,
I agree.
You know, like they, what would they talk about? Nothing. Mm-hmm. Whereas Pinhead and Freddy, I feel like there could be some really fun banter. So I would see that one. I feel like they're two sort of outgoing fellas who could really just get each other's goats. Yeah.
Chew the scenery, for
sure. Chew the scenery a bit, yeah. But in terms of, like, our Horror Hinge dating site,
right?
I do feel like Michael and Jason would be more compatible as life mates.
Oh, they would be nice life mates.
Like, I'd love to see a 21 Jump Street with Freddy and Pinhead.
Totally. They're not romantic. They're friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
I love them. I support them.
Okay, great. So we're also writing some buddy comedies.
okay, I'm writing
and some romantic comedies, apparently.
They deserve love, finally, honestly.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. We don't have like enough Bride Ofs out there. We have Bride of Chucky, and it's amazing.
Bride of Frankenstein.
Like, Bride of Frankenstein, of course.
Yeah.
But like, where's Bride of, you know, Jigsaw? You know, like.
Yeah. Or Groom.
Or Groom. Oh my God, of course.
You
Groom.
Know.
Jigsaw, I, for sure, Groom.
Yeah, definitely. I was just going to say that.
Yeah. Wait, I missed that. Who's who, Groom?
Oh, Jigsaw, definitely Groom.
Jigsaw's gay.
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah.
1,000%. Yeah. Wow, I really feel like we've broken some boundaries and figured out some really important things today.
I really do, too. And I really appreciate you guys, you know, making that space here on Development Hell. My sort of final question for you guys is, where can you be found online and when does your show come out?
We release episodes every Wednesday and you can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's on the Dread Podcast Network.
Oh.
Podcast Ooh, siblings. it's called Kim and Kat Stay Alive Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find us on Instagram and TikTok at KK Sam Podcast. We have a Facebook group. We have a Facebook page. I think that's all the things, right?
We also have an amazing Patreon where Kim and I are constantly doing bonus content. So if our 2.5 hours a week that you normally get to hear us on our regular stream on Wednesday just isn't enough for you, and honestly, why would it be? You can also join our Patreon. We just started doing live watches where our patrons can watch movies with us, and we do postmortems after episodes where we go back and teach each other the things that we didn't know about as we were telling the movie. We also do mini-sodes where we'll kind of change that up. Sometimes we'll watch a short horror film. Sometimes we'll watch a trailer. Sometimes, you know, our mini-sodes are kind of whatever we're feeling in the moment. So there's a lot of places to find us, and we would love for you to join us.
Okay, well, you heard them. You have to find them. You have to listen. You have to support the girls because the show's great, and you're going to love it.
Thanks, Josh.
Okay, well, thank you for joining me today. I had a blast. What
this
a great way
so
to
fun.
Wrap up the season. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. This
and
is
we
a blasty
will,
blast.
We will be back whether we are invited or not.
Oh, you're going to break in. Actually, the door wasn't locked, so it's fine.
Great.
I'm scary.
I brought my blood. Don't worry.
Yay.
Oh, it's very smart. Thank you so much for listening to Development Hell. If you enjoy this podcast, then please do us a major favor of leaving us 5 stars and writing a positive review. It really makes all the difference in the world.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.